Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, social critic, and mentor. Navigating the messy art of living and the complex beauty of relationships through these conversations that we need to have, but we often shy away from. Well, it's another Tuesday, Elizabeth. Where are we headed to today?
Well, Brad, given that this Sunday is Mother's Day, and that my introduction begins with wife and mother and grandmother, we're going to talk about mothering, Mother's Day, and my deep conviction that we need to abolish Mother's Day completely.
Really? Okay. All right. I'm interested in hearing how you arrive at this determination that we need to get rid of Mother's Day. Now,
abolish.
I know we're going to get some backstory on Mother's Day,
I hope. Yeah, absolutely. There are many reasons why I have come to feel very strongly that Mother's Day as it exists actually does much more harm to mothers than good. And I will make my case for that over the next few minutes. But one of the primary reasons that I believe that Mother's Day has missed its mark and not really served what the intention was is that the Mother's Day that we honor, recognize today is nothing like the first, you know, what was first envisioned and proposed as Mother's Day back in the late 1800s after the Civil War, originally by Julia Ward Howe and also Ann Jarvis. And then ultimately the Mother's Day that we see on the 2nd May of the year was proposed and was put into, I don't know if it's a law, but it was made a holiday in 1914 by Ann Jarvis's daughter, Anna, which starts to get complex because it's Ann and Anna. But the original women who proposed Mother's Day and what they were looking for in the late 1800s, this is not where we are. And in many ways, I feel like the Mother's Day that we have disrespects what the intentions were to honor the work of mothers. And I'm not diminishing that. As I said before, that's my introduction. My identity as a wife and a mom and a grandmother, you know, holds firm. I believe that it's the most important job that any human being can take on is mothering. But having a day about mothers, I think, takes a lot of people off the hook from having to really look at what it is to be a mother in society. So that's my first shot across the bow, shall we say.
You mean it's not about flowers and cards?
No. No. And again, I want the abolishment of Mother's Day as we know it. And I want you to sit with that idea, whatever your feelings that you're having, just sit with that for a moment, because I want to kind of set the mood for where we're going today by playing a song that was actually written by Julia Ward Howe in the late 1800s. She was an abolitionist. She was a women's rights advocate. She was a peace activist. She was horrified by the bloodshed and death that occurred around the Civil War. And so she wrote a pro-union, anti-slavery anthem that we all know today called the Battle Hymn of the Republic. So let's hear from Julia Ward Howe's songbook.
Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. He is trampling out the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored. He hath loosed the fateful lightning of his terrible swift sword. His truth is marching on. Glory, glory, hallelujah.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and that is the Battle Hymn of the Republic, written in the late 1800s by Julia Ward Howe. And again, she wrote this song because she was a strong abolitionist and a women's rights advocate and peace activist. And she was very active during the Civil War and was so dismayed by the death and destruction that she felt moved to write this pro-union, anti-slavery anthem, which we have kind of taken into our culture. And I don't know if many people even know the origins of it, because mostly we hear it played by big bands at military celebrations or at football games or at, you know, different sporting events. And so we kind of lose what the initial intention was, which was for women to step forward and help work towards peace. So I'm going to give you a little backstory on how we got to where we are today. You know, the original Mother's Day origins were a call for women to work together to improve global policy making and to seek peace. And the idea was to find a day to honor also women's work and role in the family. Two important pieces. For Julia Ward Howe, she wanted to bring women together. She created what she called the Mother's Day Proclamation in 1870. It was actually originally written and said, appeal to womanhood throughout the world, but it became the Mother's Day Proclamation. And she was urging the creation of an international body of women who could find a way to avoid war and bloodshed. And that effort was unsuccessful. And so Julie Ward Howe made another attempt to establish an annual Mother's Day for Peace that would happen in June. And that happened in a few places, but never really held up. Now, the modern day version of Mother's Day, as I mentioned, was attributed to Ann Jarvis. And it got to where it is because of her daughter, Anna. But why Ann Jarvis? Well, Ann also was alive during the Civil War. She was in Appalachia. She had birthed 12 children. Many of them died because of the poor hygiene and poor conditions in her community and her area. So she worked tirelessly to help improve the public health of her area. She actually joined a national public health movement in the late 1800s that was led by women reformers. And also, just side note with history, you know, the women's suffragist movement begins in 1848. So there are, and even prior to that, there were many women who were part of the abolitionist movement. So women were very active already looking for, you know, rights for women and rights for families and to improve the living conditions. We were right on the cusp of what we called the progressive era. So Ann Jarvis worked with this effort. She led her own effort and organized what they called Mothers Work Clubs in her area. And then she supported what they started calling Mothers Work Days, where she would gather the mothers in the area. They would come together and pick up trash and undertake different projects to improve local environmental conditions and improve the hygiene, because from Ann Jarvis's experience, you know, they were lacking in basic hygiene and conditions to be able to raise children in a healthy way. So then when the Civil War started, Ann Jarvis changed her focus a bit, because where they were in Appalachia was completely divided in the community. Part of the neighbors were fighting for the Union and part were for the Confederate. And so you had local soldiers, people who had grown up together, fighting against each other. And so Jarvis shifted her focus, and she insisted that the women's clubs that she had started work to help both the Confederate and Union troops who were sick and wounded. And it was incredibly controversial that she was doing this. And then she also worked to promote peace and unity following the war. Again, very controversial. In 1968, despite the death threats she was receiving and threats of violence, she organized Women's Friendship Day to bring the families from both sides together to try to restore a sense of community. So just knowing that history, you can think, wow, we should have an Ann Jarvis Day or a Julia Ward Howe Day, or absolutely understand the power of women in, you know, the face of the masculine continuously going off and fighting wars and unnecessary death and bloodshed. Women have consistently throughout history, I mean, this is just considered kind of modern history in the United States, but throughout history, ancient Rome, there were stories of women who were, you know, trying to bring about peace and to dissuade wars from happening. It's always come down to the women. So that would be enough to have a Mother's Day. But It wasn't until 1905, after Ann Jarvis's death, that her daughter Anna decided that she wanted to establish a National Mother's Day on the second Sunday of May, because that was the day of her mom's death. And she really wanted to honor her mother. That was her big push. And so she wanted to have this beautiful day, you know, sending white carnations and urge people to handwrite messages, letters of gratitude to their mothers. So she didn't really even stay with the activist piece and the activist part of her mother's life and working towards unity and peace and community and supporting women. She really just wanted to honor the efforts of her mother, which is a beautiful thing. But as history tells it, it wasn't until 1914 that Mother's Day became official. It was right before, ironically, the beginning of World War I. But Ann Jarvis was deeply disappointed how quickly her vision of this Mother's Day honoring her mother became a commercial venture. So here we are, many decades later, and we celebrate Mother's Day with cards and flowers. And again, it's not that I don't want to honor mothers and that I don't believe that we should, you know, not take the time to honor people. I absolutely do. But I think this becomes almost a smokescreen, preventing us from paying attention to things that really are critical for mothers in society today and for mothers throughout history, and the work that women have put in to, again, earn the right to vote, and then going through the second wave of feminism to get Title IX passed so women have access to education, and attempts to have ERA passed to have equal pay and equal rights. That still has not been codified in the Constitution, but that effort remains. And then the third wave of feminists, you know, working towards intersectionality and for women of, you know, all backgrounds, all ethnicities, all sexual orientations to be recognized and supported and protected. And then now we're in this fourth wave of feminism that we don't really talk a lot about, but it's addressing that work-life balance that still doesn't exist, where primarily most of the housework, home, house care, and child care, two-thirds of it, still fall on the women in the family and women in general. Three-quarters of all elder care generally falls on the eldest daughter in each family. And yet we don't have in place provisions to protect women so that when they step outside of the workforce, the labor force, to care for children or care for the elderly, that they are still financially whole at the end of that. We don't have laws in place that protect women from being harmed or being paid the same or having protections. We have laws on the books, but they are rarely enforced because of that little known non-codifying of the ERA. That when things get to the Supreme Court, they generally do not get passed because women under the Constitution are not seen as equal to men. So, yes, I love the idea of a day of breakfast in bed and some flowers, but I feel that it is unintentionally over the years become a default or a sad second to what really should be happening is probably having a day of protest, a Mother's Day of protest, a Mother's Day of activism, Mother's Day of advocating. And instead of being on a Sunday, why not an actual holiday on a Monday where women can come together and, you know, honor the efforts of many generations of women who, through no violence, were able to earn the right to vote, pass Title IX, make workplace environment more accessible. Why don't we do that? That's my proposal. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you are invited to be part of the conversation today. As always, our number is 805-781-3875. I'm curious to know what you think of this idea, or do mothers get enough attention, or maybe we need multiple Mother's Days, or who and how do we go about who do we talk to and how do we go about changing things to elevate the status of women and mothers? And ultimately, maybe we need to really revisit the idea of mothering itself. Because although we have mothers and fathers, the mothering piece is not really gender specific. The skill sets to mothering are not just for women. You can also be part of the conversation after the show by sending me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Listen to previous shows at kcbx.org or podcast our show wherever it is you look for podcasts. You can find us on Spotify as well. And if you leave a review, it helps other people to find the show. So I look forward to seeing where the conversation takes us. We're going to take a quick break and come right back right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875. You can call up and tell Mama what's on your mind. See, I pulled that together there.
Nice. And you know, I totally missed the line in there where it talks about how he's wearing your clothes.
I missed that, too.
Yeah.
I was focused on telling Mama.
Yeah.
There you go. Yes, our phone lines are open. I'm curious to know your thoughts on Mother's Day. And do you honor Mother's Day? What does that mean to you as a mom? Do you care about Mother's Day? Here are my thoughts. I have many. On Mother's Day, when my kids were little, I generally wanted my husband to take them and go away so that I could just be on my own for a day because it's a lot of work raising children. And again, I can think of nothing that I would have rather done with my life than be a mom. I get that. But it is a lot of work and it's nice to get a break. So that was kind of the Sunday for Mother's Day deal. For my own mom, I don't remember making her breakfast in bed. If we did, Mom, I'm sorry because I'm sure it was terrible. I think my mom's goal was maybe that we just didn't fight the whole day for one day.
Worthy. Yeah.
But yeah, Mother's Day for some people is a big brunch and a big outing and a lot of flowers. And again, not to, you know, poke too hard, but I think a lot of people use Mother's Day as a way of kind of being able to use Mom all year for phone calls when they're in trouble or a little money on the side or, you know, listening to their stories or watching the kids or, you know, doing all the extra work that moms do. And then once a year, it's like, oh, thank you for all the ways that you selflessly share your life with me. Here are some flowers. Because I don't know, you know, if the whole role of selfless mother is really an honor or something to be honored for. I don't mind being of service to my family. Love that. But I know that the rest of my family is equally as capable of being of service to and for each other. And so I think that's why this whole idea of changing, you know, this attitude that it is mother's work and that mothers, you know, raise children and that mothers do the care. You know, when you tell the story over and over again, we have this learned helplessness that only moms can do these certain things. You know, that's the mother's role, and mothers are more nurturing and women are more nurturing by nature and they're better at tending to the kids. But that doesn't prove to be true throughout history. We are much more partnered in our relationships. You know, things really, really changed during the Industrial Revolution when men for the first time were going away to work instead of working in the family store or on the family farm, where families kind of worked as a team. And so men and women shared the duties of caring for the family and caring for the business and however they kept their families together. And it was not gender specific. Kids learn different things from both parents, but that ability to nurture and mother, you know, is inherently possible for all people. And it's something that we probably should be nurturing more in children and teenagers and young adults. And that's what part of this fourth wave of feminism that I alluded to is all about. It's actually a lot of men who are stepping forward saying, hey, I'd like to be more than a paycheck. I think I would like to be more involved in my children's lives. And then we actually, you know, started to see this shift of men kind of looking back towards their family post-second wave of feminism. And I don't want to go too heavy on lecture, although I could, but there was, you know, this moment in time during the second wave of feminism when there was such high rates of divorce, men kind of got moved out of the picture even more than they'd been moved out of the picture before, because that real traditional family of the 1950s and 60s had men really completely separated from family. They were just going off to work and reading the newspaper, you know, that whole kind of caricature of what it was to be a dad, you know, silent and barely present. But that really started shifting post-second wave, and men started looking around saying, you know, this is not working out for me. I don't have my family. I want to be involved. And so men have started to really increase their presence in family systems. Actually, the stay-at-home rate of parents is about 14%, and 8% of them are men who are the full-time caregivers.
I'm actually very surprised at that it's that high. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
So I wonder if we, you know, again, if we change the idea of Mother's Day. My first wish would be that it was much more focused on activism, being advocates for women's rights, like a day of protest, a day of action, a day of movement towards, you know, peace and unity. That was the original intention for Julia Howe and Ann Jarvis, you know, back in the 1800s, was to have women's groups and women's clubs come together to do the work that wasn't getting done, that they saw, you know, men as just paths to destruction and women needing to come in always and do the caring and tending and nursing and rebuilding of communities. That's one piece. But then the mothering piece, I'm curious to know how much mothering people do in their lives, whether it's children or animals or the elderly or friends. And do we recognize our mothering skills? And if we don't feel that we have mothering skills, then how would we go about learning them or teaching them? And then the third piece of that is, in order for any of this to happen, we would have to really do a deep social reboot of what it is to be a woman in society and empower the status of women, and even more so, empower the work that's primarily done by women, which is caregiving. Most of the child care workers, most of the teachers, most of the elder care workers are women. And jobs that tend to be primarily done by women tend to be get less pay. Women are paid less. So which of the three? And what do you think about the Sunday Mother's Day? I mean, is that too harsh for you, for having me say let's abolish it and make it go away?
It's harsh, but I understand why. I mean, I've always wanted to celebrate the women in my life, my mom and my wife. When my kids were young and not really paying attention to these things, I was kind of the person that in the family that, hey, guys, it's time to, you know, let mom know how much, you know, you appreciate her. Mm-hmm. But I think you're also right that a lot of times it's a salve for all of the thousand other things that she's going to stick her neck out on over the next 12 months. Mm-hmm. And I think that there needs to be some kind of balance. But I also believe that women have done, as you rightfully explained to us, have done a great job in trying to steer society towards a more peaceful and coexistent society. But as we've found with the inability to pass the Equal Rights Amendment, and all of the pushback that had, you know, has come in the wake of these efforts, we still have a long way to go. And
yes.
I think some of that's cultural, depending on the different cultures that we've got in the world, and some of that's just, you know, inherent not wanting to let go of a perceived power dynamic, I think.
Well, and there's also two other problems. One is we have kind of this virgin mother complex in society where we elevate women on this pedestal that, oh, my dear mother, isn't she fabulous and angelic? And that almost makes her unhuman.
Right.
You know, that she's like above needing anything, just a normal human to be because she's so magnificent. But then again, that strips away all the other parts of being a mother, which are, you know, having a job and having interests and having desires and also having probably their dark side and having their dreams for their future. You know, all of that starts to become minimized because women get either elevated on this platform where, you know, what more could they need than a card from their child? That's tough. And if you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. In the lead up to Mother's Day, we're having a conversation about should Mother's Day even exist? And if it's going to continue to exist, should we re-examine the unintended consequences of having one day a year that we honor moms? And maybe we need to change the focus of what that looks like. Our number is 805-781-3875. The other part, you know, I mean, there's so many pieces to it that gets complex. Because when we look at, you know, the efforts of women throughout society, like why is it, I mean, I don't have to ask why, but women tend to be in that kind of clean up the mess role throughout history. And as a reward, they get paid less, we get paid less, and we continue to do the majority of housework, we do continue more of the childcare. And every time there's been an opportunity in society for women to be elevated or at least brought into a state of equity with men, it's been kind of shot down. And one of the examples is that for stay-at-home moms, for women who stay at home and raise their children, throughout history, there's been multiple proposals to have a mother's pension or a mother's paycheck, kind of like they do for the military. You're paid for your service in the military. And the idea behind this proposal was that women staying home and raising children is a service to the nation, because apparently we care so deeply for, you know, women and children and families that we should support these women. And the last time this was proposed was in the 1970s, right around the second wave of feminism. And the bummer about that women's pension is that activists and those in government couldn't decide what the definition of mother would be, so they just scrapped the whole thing and never really revisited it. And I don't, that for a lot of activists too, the idea that there'd be a mother's pension went against what a lot of feminists wanted, which was women to be freed from the chains of the home. And so the idea that there'd be a mother's pension, they thought, would just tie women back to the house. So as often happens in many movements, especially around women, that women themselves start to get divided within the whole conversation. But the other piece I was thinking about was the whole, when women are successful in society, when they do step out and have a career and they're able to, you know, raise children, have a career and run their family, many times those women have to kind of become what we call patriarchal, go into the patriarchal motherhood, which means they just adopt what the expectations are of the masculine world. They, you know, strap on. I don't know if you remember the 1980s with the big shoulder pads.
How can I forget?
Suits, yeah. So that was a whole thing for fashion to make women look like they had status and going into the boardroom, because there was no, you know, changes that were made in corporations to accommodate all these women that were coming into the workforce. Women were just supposed to suck it up and become part of the, you know, the way things were. The bummer is then that women started to, again, divide themselves between the working women who were kind of taking on that patriarchal motherhood and the women who were kind of upholding traditional mothering values, and then the women who were kind of in the middle, because women have always worked on some level. And so now you have these three factions of women, and if women can't support each other, then it's hard to imagine or expect that culture is going to change and support them too. Yeah, those are my thoughts. I'm curious that no one cares about moms. But I can talk about them for another half hour.
Well, you know, the it's interesting that you talk about this schism even among women themselves, mm-hmm. because what is one of the latest phases that's coming through with young women that I see is the tradwife movement.
Yeah, I was going to try to avoid that.
Okay.
Only because it's very much influencer driven, and mm-hmm. that feels like a whole nother show where, you know, these women aren't really trad wives because they're, and for those of you who don't know, it's like a traditional wife, the women who are home and raising children and have chickens and, you know, do everything with natural products and they feed their family natural foods. It's just really admirable way to devote yourself. There was a book written years ago called Surrendering to Motherhood that was kind of around this idea that if you're going to do this work, go all in and do this work, mm-hmm. that traditional work of, you know, raising a family and keeping a home and having this beautiful life put together. The bummer with the trad wives is that they're making money by posting and being influencers and selling products. And so they're not really traditional wives because they have a whole career going.
It's their job.
Their job is being
making money.
So I struggle with that one. It's like, nah, I don't talk to them. But there is something else I want to bring up. But we're going to take a break first before we go there. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875. We are going to take a quick break and come back and continue our conversation right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Hey, Mama, it's me. Said you've been away, child. Said you've been a long time running. Boy, you better sit down. Can't listen when the sun's out. Only son, this'll be so hard to hear. Come on, Mama, what do you mean? I know you've been knocked down. I know you ain't all. Nothing ever could be is. Why you gonna wait so long?
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875. And the conversation is around Mother's Day and whether or not Mother's Day is an appropriate holiday as it stands, because it doesn't really represent the original intention of Mother's Day, which was first proposed in the late 1800s by Julia Ward Howe, who is best known for having written the Battle Hymn of the Republic. But she was also an abolitionist and a women's right advocate and a peace activist. And then also Ann Jarvis, who was a women's activist creating mothers groups in her own time in the late 1800s in Appalachia. And the Mother's Day we know today is in honor of Ann Jarvis and was pushed by her daughter Anna Jarvis to honor her mom. But my concern, again, is that we need to have, I believe, we need to have some way to encourage women, mothers, to continue taking their power in culture, that demanding hygienic, clean neighborhoods and access to clean air and clean water. I mean, we just had an issue in South County this week with, you know, water being potentially tainted. And if we care so much about families and women, if that's what we talk about and we want to support that, then the efforts of women to bring about peace and also to bring about better living conditions for families should take a more center stage place. I'd rather have a day of protest on Mother's Day than anything else to say, hey, you know, the things that we care deeply about are being ignored. Man, we can't continue to fund a military-industrial complex and defund those things that care for and support women and families.
It's very interesting you say that, because Marie from the Five Cities called in, but she didn't want to get on the air. But her suggestion was, what if we take the day after Mother's Day and we declare that the day of, you know, the national day of Mother's Day speaking up.
Mother's Protest.
Yeah, Mother's Protest Day, and organize around that so that moms still get their flowers on the traditional Mother's Day weekend.
Right, because we don't want to divide women who really like the traditional aspects of that. Don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. Got it.
But what if we did, you know, establish that day and start that movement and start that conversation so that every single year when these issues still come up that need to be addressed, that women everywhere can empower themselves and get together and walk away from the things that they're doing on that day to just make their voices known and make their concerns known.
I like that because it makes it a couple days and both way to honor the work of women and their role in families, because we don't want to diminish that. It's an incredibly powerful role to serve. But then also kind of the unsung role for women is the amount of time women put in as volunteers in their communities, the vast amount of volunteer hours that are done by women. And I really thank you, Marie, for calling in. And I love other ideas of that as well. 805-781-3875. Currently, 74% of mothers with children under the age of 18 are in the labor force, 74%. 75% of that 74% work full-time, and then the other percentage is some full-time and flexible hours. Women still face what they call a motherhood penalty. So in the workforce, if they're working full-time or part-time, women tend to still face lower pay and get fewer promotions because they're mothers. And there isn't, you know, the way corporations can't adjust for women needing more time off because women are still considered to have more flexibility than men in their jobs, just kind of the traditional lens. And so if women are having to go to, you know, practices or pick up kids or go to conferences, they tend to get fewer promotions. Opportunities. Women currently, on average, work 35 and a half hours per week at their paid employment. But then if you add on top of that the chores and work that women do at home, that's another 13.2 hours. But this is a statistic that really surprised me, and I wanted to do a deeper dive, that the amount of time that women perform active child care currently, working or not, is 12 and a half hours per week. But in 1975, 50 years ago, women working or not, and more women were home at that time, spent an average of 8.6 hours per week actively caring for children. Now, I don't know where the children were those other hours, but That's an increased amount of active childcare. So it's no wonder that we see such a crisis of maternal mental health, that more women say that they can't keep up or they feel like they're drowning or they don't feel like they're doing anything well. You just look at the increased amount of responsibilities they're taking on. And then on top of that, two in three moms, 59% of the population of women, volunteer and spend time either with an organization or in some committee to help improve their neighborhood and community. And women who are very active in their volunteering spend up to 60 hours a month volunteering.
Wow.
On top of it. Yes. Wow. Wow.
That's a lot. But, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, when you're talking about the increase in hours that women are now focusing in on their family, isn't that kind of a direct reaction to, and I'm going back just to my experience because both of my parents worked. My mother was a legal secretary, and so when I was a young kid, she spent some time, you know, doing home things at home, mm-hmm. but primarily I was a latchkey kid, mm-hmm. and I think as the years went on, there was a reaction to that where women decided they wanted to do something different. And so they increased the amount of time that they were available to their family and their children.
That could be. I don't know, honestly, if it's that. I think it, unfortunately, is the cost of childcare.
Yeah.
Is part of the issue. You know, if you're looking at $1,200 to $2,000 a month per child for childcare, that puts a lot of people in a position where they can't afford it. So they're, you know, cobbling together childcare and then you're spending a lot more time directly doing the childcare because they don't have those services. And also, you know, back in the day in the 70s, families did a lot of child sharing of duties. You know, women started clubs or groups, moms clubs, where they would, you know, one mom would have four or five kids over to her house for a few hours every day, and the moms in the neighborhood would take turns with that. So that alleviated some of the direct time that moms had for doing active childcare. They would share that. But we don't have communities that really support that kind of interaction anymore. So that kind of makes it challenging for women to get that support. And then again, the idea that we can spread out the duties of those who are mothering, that women in many cases take on the roles, all the roles of caregiving. We call it maternal gatekeeping. And so we have that complexity as well, is that by nature, women tend to start doing all of the work. They feel more efficient. They do it quickly. And so dads or partners will try to help out. And the mom's like, no, I can do it faster myself. Or no, I've got that covered. And then at the end of the day or the end of the week, the mom's like, why does nobody help me? Why am I so exhausted? Why does this always fall on me? And so that gatekeeping of kind of preventing people from stepping in to help also makes it challenging for women. So we have this kind of confluence of women's ability to multitask and do many things, to be raising children and to also, you know, be volunteering and also be standing on protest lines. The ability to do all those things also lead to high levels of burnout. And I just think part of the challenge is that we don't have the downtime that we used to have in our lives to do things like hang out at the bowling league or have social time with other families. You know, there's a famous book that was written in the 80s called Bowling Alone that talks about the decrease in participation in organizations outside of the home, where a lot of people kind of got their support and felt fed and nurtured with this opportunities to be with other people. Now, people are spending less time away from home. I mean, less time away from home, yes, and more time at home. And so that work and intensity of taking care of the family and taking care of the home and taking care of themselves, you just never get a breath. So it's always like not one thing, that's always multiple things that make it challenging. If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and our number is 805-781-3875. The other thing we didn't touch on, Brad, is the little story that floated through last week about wanting to pay women $1,000 to have children because we have a shortage of children being born. And I don't know how hard everyone else laughed at that, but I continue to have this deep kind of angry laugh about some proposal. Now, maybe if you wanted to offer $132,000 to have a child, because that's the current going rate minimum to raise a child in the United States. So maybe $132,000 might have a few takers, but $1,000, really? You know, childcare alone, as I said, is $1,200 to $2,000 a month. And who's going to be there to, you know, make sure that these kids have access to clean air, clean water, food, education, an education system that actually supports their education? I mean, I don't know if anyone else felt the same kind of frustration with even mentioning something like that when we fail in so many ways to take care of women and children and those who mother. It can be really laughable. And I guess, again, part of the challenge is that there are so many competing shiny objects that it's hard to have a conversation about one thing. Like, I wonder if it was easier during the days of the suffragist movement, because the one thing that women could kind of come together and fight for was the right to vote. And so you could bring together this coalition of women with, you know, one really strong voice, and also, you know, the abolitionists at the time were working together and working really hard. And so there's two options or two things that people could rally against. Maybe part of the challenge today is that we have so many things that we want to protest or take care of or bring awareness about that it's overwhelming. It's like, how do we even start? 805-781-3875 is our number. And is that Bill? Hi, Bill. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I just want to remind your audience about the debate between Ford and
Carter.
Mm-hmm. In his day. And Ford was bragging about how many jobs there were in America, more than any other time in country. And Carter says, yeah, but a lot of those people who don't want to be working, but they have to because their husbands can't make enough money to support a family. Mm. And I think that's still with us.
Oh, absolutely. I don't remember that. But wow, that tells you a lot about the history of women feeling kind of forced back to work, or families feeling like they have to have two incomes. Because isn't there a statistic, Bill, that men today make almost half equivalency of what their fathers made back in the 60s and 70s?
Women have to work now, almost.
Yeah, that's really frightening. What do you think about... What do you think about my proposal of changing Mother's Day to being more of a Mother's Day of protest or activism?
Well, we don't have, you know, Mothers for Peace for Nothing in this county.
You're right.
And I think you should mention that, too. Yeah, that's a good idea.
All right. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to call and sharing a little history with us, Bill.
Okay.
Have a great day. That's right. Mothers for Peace. Again, traditionally, women have been out there on the front lines, you know, for generations and generations. When something needs to get done, women are the one that step forward. And again, bloodless revolutions are the calling card of women's protests. And Mothers for Peace, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, the suffragist movement, the ERA movement. And, you know, we have continued efforts by women to support Black Lives Matter and the Native Indigenous Peoples' rights and LGBTQ rights. And back in the 60s, during the Civil Rights Movement, during the summer where people were going in and trying to desegregate the bus lines in the South, most of the people that went down to work in the South were women. And a lot of them were stay-at-home moms who went down and were volunteering their time. So a long history of activism. 805-781-3875. Charlie, you're on the air. Turn down your radio.
Okay. Talk about women activism. I understand that prohibition was pushed by mothers who, their husband, the man, was paid in cash, stopped by on the way home, and spend all the money at the bar.
Oh, man.
And
yep.
That was one of the motivations for Prohibition. And also the Decoration Day of the, what we now call Memorial Day, you decorate the graves of soldiers that were killed in the war, no matter which side they fought on.
Mm-hmm.
And also band boosters. My mom was active in band boosters, raising money for band uniforms and advocating keeping music programs in the school for the kids.
So maybe part of our Mother's Day, Charlie, should be celebrating women, mother activists, women as activists.
Right, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, I know there's the, one of the big dicks, there's a Davis High School, junior high school band that's active here, and they some of the big activists are the mothers or women pushing for having to fight to keep music in schools for the junior high school bass band that plays festivals.
Yep. And it is
Bakersfield.
True. Yeah, and these are, Charlie, thank you for reminding me of that as well. I appreciate you giving me a call because, again, maybe we need to be really paying attention to the day-to-day activism of mothers. And it's not just about getting the breakfast cooked or keeping the house clean or caring for the children. Those are all part of the duties of raising a family. But then that over and above part, if we're going to talk about the over and above part, it is women who tend to be out there in the forefront of keeping programs running and raising money for whenever things are cut. Whenever things we care about are cut, it looks like a group of women are coming together to figure out how to keep it moving forward. The suffragists were the original bake sale moms. That was one of the ways that they were, you know, raising money to raise awareness during the suffragist movement, was having bake sales as they quietly protested out in the front of the White House and the state houses. 805-781-3875 is our number. And Anne, you're on the air. Thanks for giving us a call.
Hi. Yeah, thank you. for talking about this. I just remember I graduated college in 1974, and I remember when we really started out wanting to go into the workforce, we thought we could change work and make daycare like a normal part of any business, that they would, you know, that we could convince them that they needed to provide daycare. And, you know, we thought that the husband would, you know, take a greater interest, which I think they have. I think men have changed. At
yes.
least seems that way to me. But I don't think the social, you know, the community, it takes a village, you know, business is willing to step up and really make childcare part of, you know, their accommodation. I don't think that really happened that much.
I agree, and I think part of that challenge, Anne, was because women moved so quickly into the workforce and didn't do the finish work of demanding that those changes be put into place. So the corporations, in many ways, didn't have to make any changes because they got a whole, you know, new group into their workforce without having to make any accommodations. So I think the only way that that really would have stuck, if the second wave of feminists had, you know, stuck to it and said, we're going to demand these changes to hours, flexible hours, you know, childcare, parental paid time off. And the bummer is, once that ship sailed and the corporations had so many women willing to come to work, and as a previous caller called, because men at this point, all of a sudden their wages weren't keeping up, there was no incentive to change the work environment to support women and families.
I totally agree with that. And it's kind of a shame. It's sort of a lost thing, because now it's just, I just think it's untenable. I just don't think people can do all that.
Anymore. I don't know how we get there. But Anne, thank you for taking the time to call.
Sure, bye.
Enjoy your day. Yeah, that's, you know, again, nothing is one thing. It's all these little tendrils of things that kind of come together and make it really challenging, as Anne said, you know, almost untenable. One of the things that really needed to happen in that second wave, and it's always been, you know, a lament that I share with my students, is that that role of mothering really got diminished even more, that we elevated the role of work and productivity and the importance of the salary and, you know, the head of the household. It's almost, you know, kind of hyper rose. And so that's what we started raising our children to believe in the last three generations. Like, it's about your work and have your career and find that well-paying job and make sure that you have that all set. And then think about, you know, your family. And that seems so backwards to me. It just seems counterintuitive to what we should be putting our time and energy into. But again, there's no incentive for corporations or, you know, a materialistic society to change if people are willing to participate. And when we had the power in that moment of time to say, yes, we want equal access to universities and to sports and to education and to workplace safety and opportunities, and we're going to have mothers protests like we did during the suffragist movement, we are going to quietly resist until that changes. But I don't know if we can muster that power again, which is a challenge, which is why I lead back to what I started the show with, is we need to rethink Mother's Day. Because I think that Mother's Day, as it stands, with the flowers and the Hallmark cards and, you know, the brunch somewhere, is a way of just throwing a bone to the role of women and mothers in society. And so you get Mother's Day. So I don't know, you know, what else the problem is. You get to have a job. No one's preventing you from working. You know, you can have everything you want. You just also need to make sure you're taking care of the kids and taking care of the elderly and taking care of people when they're sick. And you keep doing those things. But everything else, you know, is working in your favor. So on Sunday, I encourage you to have a conversation with your kids or your family or whoever it is you're celebrating Mother's Day with about what is the role of mothers in mothering. And it's two-part. One, we need to honor the activism that women have done throughout history that has been essential to providing security and support and community for families, and also the important role that mothering plays in society, that mothering is is a mother's job, but mothering is also all of our job. We all have the capacity to nurture and care for and tend to other people, to make them feel safe and seen and loved. And part of our daily mission should be to pay attention to how well are we tapping into that part of our soul that wants to love and to be loved. To love and to be loved, and to see if we're meeting those expectations.
You know, we didn't have time to get him on because we're closing, but
yes.
Our good friend Harry Farmer, who I've...
Hi, Harry.
Yeah, Harry, I've made acquaintances with him out at Live Oak when we're both working for Acorn Radio. He's a great guy, a heck of a thinker. He just wanted to underscore the fact that we need to connect mothers to Mother Earth because... Mm-hmm. They're all taking care of us, and we should take care of both of them, you know, like as the caregivers and the life givers that they are.
I love that. Thank you, Harry, because it is a good way to end it. We do talk, you know, last week we talked about a couple weeks ago about Earth Day and the importance of tending to Mother Earth. And ecofeminism came out of that second wave of feminism. It was a whole effort by the women in the second wave of feminism to note that the way we treat our environment, the way we treat our natural environment is very connected to the way we treat women and children. And when we don't care for both of them, we have no future and we have no quality of life. So there you have it. This has been a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. You can podcast our shows. Check us out on Spotify, also YouTube. Subscribe and support, or go to kcbx.org, and you can also listen to previous shows there. As always, I appreciate you coming in and checking us out on Tuesdays at 2. We'll be back next week right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Yeah.
Everywhere I'm turning, nothing seems complete. I stand up and searching for the better part of me.
Yeah.
I hang my head from sorrow
so much.
State of humanity.
What's up?
Wear it on my shoulders.
Yeah.
Gotta find the strength in me.